Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
Talk some football with the professor, John Clayton, who's with us every day at 4, except for days like this when the Mariners pre-upped us. But we've got John here to talk some football with us. Hello, John.
Hello, guys.
What's the big news? What's grabbing your attention today?
Today, it was, well, of course, naturally, the trial and the verdict that has a Minnesota policeman now with a third-degree murder charge.
Right.
That he's now officially gone. And I think the big story is obviously the reaction around the league and all sports, because now team by team, teams are talking in support of how this is. The league, the NFL, just came out with theirs. NBA came out with theirs. And so that's really the big story, because, you know, ever since this started to come out with the official announcement at 2 o'clock, it's been you know, pretty constant as far as now everybody and every owner pretty much coming back and saying something and saying that, you know, this is a major change, Black Lives Matter, you name it. So that's really the big story today.
Boy, it would have been something if it went the other way, huh? It's hard to even imagine.
Well, it's what's interesting is that if you look at the press conferences and all that stuff, and they're going on as we speak and going on for a long time. And then in the meantime, instead of having riots in the street, you got people dancing in the street and you got people smiling, even though, again, this is such a tragic thing that George Floyd lost his life. But the family, you know, they're starting to recover from it. Although, again, they'll never be able to feel the loss of George Floyd. But yeah, it's like it's so different. Let's just hope that everybody around the country is going to be peaceful about this and not cause problems tonight, because I know that so many places, and I'm sure you see certain spots of them down in Seattle that are so boarded up, you know, worried about a lot of this.
Hey, John, I saw a headline earlier today that Adrian Peterson was, quote, looking for a contender to join in the upcoming season. What's his level of appeal? Is he a guy that many teams are going to be interested in at this point, or what is he looking at?
I mean, I don't know how many teams. I mean, maybe a couple. I mean, because he's still got some football left in him. Hey, you saw Frank Gore ended up going to the New York Jets last year, but that certainly wasn't a contender. But, you know, most of the contenders do have good running games. I mean, you know, maybe you might consider something down in Miami. You know, they're a team that's on the rise, and they're not great at the running back position. You know, Philadelphia is weak at running back, but that's going to be a bad team this year. You know, I don't think he's a fit here in Seattle. And, of course, he knows that any place he signs is pretty much going to be for the minimum salary, which I think that he's already accepted. But, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, you get in, see if there's going to be OTAs, see if there's going to be any mini camps, and then sometime before the start of summer, he finds a place to go.
The competition committee is meeting, aren't they?
Yes.
What are some of the things that might, what are some of the things they're going to discuss, and what are some of the things that might change?
Well, not a lot's going to change. It looks like, you know, there was a thought about having the 4th-and-15 option for onside kicks, and I think Baltimore withdrew that. And it really, this is going to be one of the lighter change meetings and stuff like that. I mean, Andy Reid and the Kansas City Chiefs want to change the numeral back jerseys, and so you can include different positions at different numbers, because, you know, with 16 players on the practice squad, and if they're going to continue that, then, you know, you've got so many uniforms, and particularly teams that have good histories that have guys retired, you start to run out of numbers to fit the positions. So they're pushing for that. There's some momentum on that front. You know, there's a back and forth right now. Whether this one's going to be the most controversial as far as, you know, allowing more contact with New York, talking to the officials on replays to see where that's going. And so there's a debate on that. I think that one probably should go, but if it doesn't, that's a big mistake. But other than that, I mean, a little bit more on the blocking for, you know, lower blocks on offensive linemen and that, trying to protect players who are on defense that could get some injuries, that they don't see some things. But other than that, it's going to be pretty watered down, because nobody's been at a meeting alive to be able to go and get some of the changes they may push for, because everything's done on Zoom right now.
When you say they're reviewing or allowing for more contact where? What are we talking about?
Yeah, no more contact by you know, earpiece and all that stuff, with New York being able to...
More communication.
More communication.
Okay,
yeah.
I thought you were talking on the field.
And even more communication with the replay person, official who's at the game.
Okay.
So it's like a combination of the two. And so there's a little resistance on that because, again, what I think, you know, the Mike Browns and some of the older owners who have been in the league for decades and all that stuff, they don't want to add too much to replay because what they're worried about is everything's going to be replayed, and all of a sudden, the next thing you know, the games are going to be 3.5 hours.
No, I thought you were talking contact on the field, and I was about to call Dave Wyman and let him celebrate and jump for joy because the game's coming. They're bringing violence back to the game.
Yeah, but I know. He loves that.
Now, as far as the number thing goes, is the idea that you could have any number at any position, so conceivably you could have a quarterback wearing number 67.
No, it's a matter of, like, for example, I've looked at how they broke it down, that instead of just having, like, you know, quarterbacks, kickers, and all that being, like, 1 through 20, taking it, like, 1 to 29 and kind of mixing and matching.
Okay.
So it's really, it's kind of let's put it this way, it's not the strongest thing in the world, but it's just trying to take advantage of the fact that now your rosters are bigger if they're going to continue with the 16 players in the practice squad, and you also have injuries, and, you know, if you start to run out of numbers.
So Mike Tomlin signs a contract extension, and the two things that jump out to me about this, I know in looking at it, 14 seasons with the team, they've never had a losing record, which is just amazing. And he's the third head coach they've hired since 1969, which is still beyond belief. And actually, when he finishes this contract, he'll have coached the Steelers longer than Bill Cowher has, and he'll go post-Ben Roethlisberger. 14 seasons with the team, they've been in the playoffs 9 times. I mean, certainly a richly deserved reward for Tomlin, but it's just amazing to me that it never ceases to be, maybe the most amazing stat in sports is three head coaches since 1969. The Browns have had four since 2018.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I know, and that's why the stability and the records have been so good, because they have that stability. Ownership believes in the coach. They go out and they try to find the right coach. I mean, certainly Art Rooney Sr. was able to find, and Dan Rooney, his son, was able to find Chuck Knoll. Then they found Bill Cowher, and of course he's actually an old Pittsburgh native. And then they pull Mike Tomlin as opposed to Russ Grimm, the former Steeler offensive line coach and offensive lineman. And so in the end, he didn't play offensive line for the Steelers, but he did offensive line coach. But they've hired the right coaches, and again, it shows you. Could you look at the franchise that are consistently losing? What do they have in common? They keep changing coaches. You mentioned Cleveland. You look at Detroit. I mean, you look at, for a little bit, it was Tampa Bay. I mean, a lot of the teams that continue to change coaches because you change coordinators, you change systems. Like, and again, there's always a year setback if you go from a 4-3 to a 3-4 or a 3-4 to a 4-3 because you don't have the right personnel and it takes you time to catch up. But no, I think the consistency of having, one coach for the longest period of time, as long as he's a good coach, works.
The professor, John Clayton, is with us here on 710 ESPN Seattle. It's Wyman and Bob with the Graz in for the vacationing Dave Wyman. And I saw this story, John, that the NFL and the NFLPA have approved a position-specific helmet design for the first time. So they've got a helmet right now that's been approved by both sides for offensive linemen and defensive linemen, with the idea that each position group, quarterbacks, running backs, linebackers, cornerbacks, safeties, are all going to have their own helmet specific to their position group. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I think it's great, and I think the even better part about it, it was put together by this group here in Seattle. I think Doug Baldwin has part ownership in it, a small share of ownership. I think Richard Sherman does, and I think that's the one that has it. You know, what they did do is that they banned like about, I'd say, three different sets of helmets, and they, we advise you not to use these helmets. And so that's like 18%. But no, this was a very in-depth study. I mean, there was 66 different helmets that were studied. But I think the best part is right now the best company making the helmets is here in Seattle.
And the ones they banned, one of those was the whole Antonio Brown flap, right?
I know.
He wanted his old helmet, and that was one of the ones they said was a no-go, right?
Yeah, which, of course, do you think maybe they'll keep him out of the league this year?
That'd be a shame.
And not be in Seattle?
Oh, what a shame that'd be.
Oh, that'd be just terrible.
What a shame that would be.
Yeah, what about him in Seattle? Why is that still lingering?
Because he's still unsigned, and you know Russell Wilson wants him. You know they, you know they're still talking in Tampa, but they're not close whatsoever. And so he's probably trying to make up some of the money that he lost last year. But it's almost going to be impossible for him to do this because you know there's no leverage right now, particularly with a 30-plus-year-old player trying to get extra money. Because again, you know the cap's tight. You're down to 182.5. Like a team like Tampa Bay, they've got to watch their money. I mean they're still re-signing. Like they signed a third-string quarterback today, bringing him back Ryan Griffin, but and they brought Steve McClendon back, a defensive tackle, a backup. But in the end, there's just not a lot of money there for teams like that. I mean, Tampa Bay, for example, is one of five teams that have to try to let some things go before they have the ability to re-sign to sign their draft choices.
Hey, John, I'm seeing the story about Josh Allen and his extension, and they're saying there's not a big hurry to get it done, but they expect that it'll get done maybe after the draft, the week after, or maybe deeper into spring, summer. What kind of deal is he looking at?
Oh, I'm sure he's looking at probably $37 to $38 million a year, because you can look and see last year he turned out to be one of the better quarterbacks in the league, and he's got a bright future. I mean, he's on a team right now that's set to win for many years, but you know they have to kind of watch and see how they do the contract, because you know it's one where if you once you sign a quarterback and give him a big contract, it's tougher for the team to be able to be surrounded with as much talent. But I'm sure what the thought is right now, it's better to do a deal now and kind of do it like a Patrick Mahomes deal, where you have you kind of backload the deal. And if you do it that way, then you can get through these next 2 years, 2021, 2022, because if you wait and put the fifth-year option on him next year, then all of a sudden you have to franchise him at a ridiculously high number in 2023, or pay him even that much more, because he'd get over $40 million in 2023. So it's probably better to sign him now, because you can control the contract as long as he's going to be reasonable in the first 2 years.
What any draft nuggets, any news to share with us today?
Well, let's see. Looks like Trey Lance had a good workout yesterday, and now there's more trade rumors cropping up. Rumors that the Denver Broncos, who still haven't gotten Teddy Bridgewater yet, now they're talking about, with Atlanta moving up from 9 to 4, now Carolina. They're, now that they got Sam Darnold, they're thinking, okay, we might trade back from 8, and that could involve the New England Patriots, because they want to try to move up to get one of these quarterbacks. Detroit is probably considering trading down. The big surprise today, and again, I kind of speculated on something that I wrote for the Washington Post that we posted today, is that the Giants might trade back, because they haven't done that in 11 years. And Dave Gettleman, the general manager who's been in Carolina and also in the with the New York Giants, I mean, he's never done it, but now he's considering it, because you can trade back, get some value, and still get an offensive lineman, or if you need to, get a linebacker.
Are you surprised that the Falcons are? I mean, I guess it behooves them to listen to offers out there. But I mean, Matt Ryan's not a young guy. He's going to be 36 years old. In as far as I know, they don't have his replacement on the roster. Are you surprised they're not looking at one of these quarterbacks to take at number four? Or do you think they are and they're just listening to what teams are going to offer?
I just think they're listening, because again, their cap situation is not good. But even worse is the fact that Matt Ryan has $108 million of proration remaining in his contract. And the big reason, aside from the fact they wanted to keep Russell Wilson and not trade him, the $39 million cap, can you imagine $108 million cap? That tells me that he must be on the roster at the high salary at least for 2, maybe 3 years. And if that's going to be the case, maybe at some point and in the in 2023, they can do a June 1st thing with him to lay off some of that remaining $49 million. But they got $108 million of cap tied up that they can't change.
So if they stick at four, you think they'll take a quarterback?
No, I don't think
so. No.
No. No, because again, it's like, why do you want to take a quarterback with a new coach? Then the quarterback's not going to be on the field. I know that's a silly idea that the Green Bay Packers would never do, but they did. But it's like, in the end, you want to draft a quarterback with the fourth pick in the draft, and he's going to not play till his third year?
Well, I mean, if they've got sunk cost into Matt Ryan, but yet he's not the better quarterback, maybe you draft his replacement and he sits behind him for a year, and then the following year he's your guy, and Matt Ryan's your insurance policy, because You got to pay him anyway.
Yeah, but again, you're going to be paying a quarterback over $30 million to be a backup. That doesn't work too
well. You're paying him either way,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, you're paying him either way. But then also, too, it's like, don't you think you need a position player? I mean, you know, Caleb McGarry has not worked out at the right tackle spot for him. And that's why Penny Sewell could be an option. And Jake Matthews is getting a little bit older. Then you also look at the fact that, you know, they could easily take Kyle Pitts because he's such a unique tight end, one that we haven't really seen because he's so fast and he can do so many things. You know, I think they're choosing between the two of them. But if they take a quarterback, I mean, again, the quarterback's not going to play.
Is there a worse contract out there than Matt Ryan's contract?
Oh, yeah. I mean, again, Matt Ryan's, I mean, the contract is fine. It's just a matter that what happens is that they keep digging into it to get under the cap, and so they keep pushing money back, and with that in mind, you know, it just builds up too much. I mean, it's one of the things that you know, you have going on with Aaron Rodgers right now, because if he does that, that limits the chance that they can ever get rid of him, because so much money is tied up in proration, because basically you're taking base salary, you're replacing it with signing bonus money, but that proration goes over a 3, 4, 5 year period.
John, you saw the story. Jordan Reed said that's it, calling it a career because of lingering issues from multiple concussions suffered throughout his career.
Oh, yeah, that's not surprising. In fact, I mean, he almost had done that. It was like I was probably more surprised that he came out of almost a semi-retirement and then signed with San Francisco, because his concussion things are so bad. I can't remember if the count was like 5, 7, 8, but he's had so many concussions. I was more surprised he came back last year, but I'm not surprised he retired now.
How much is the draft when it takes, which is about 9 days away, how much is it going to look like it did 2 years ago versus what it looked like last year?
It's not as good, because you have, I mean, what is it? There's like about 635 guys that are draft eligible this year, which is one of the lowest we've ever seen, and 1,046, about 400 of those guys that are decent players that stayed for that super senior season. But what I'm looking at right now is that it's going to look a little bit more normal, because you are going to have players come to the stage. You know that they're going to be getting the handshake from Roger Goodell. I mean, a few more players, I know a couple of the quarterbacks aren't going to be there, but it's going to look a little bit more normal. But I still hope that they, for the ones that aren't there, they set things up on Zoom so that you can see, the family reaction and all that stuff, because that was a great part about last year's draft. So I hope they can mix and match that.
John, I love
it. It kind of feels like they should stick with that. Sorry, Bob.
So.
It kind of feels like they should stick with that. The Zoom stuff did kind of add to it, it seemed.
Yeah, but also, too, they like to have an event that, eventually, I don't know if there's going to be some fans, I guess, that are going to be in the stands in Cleveland. But, and you want to have a site where, I mean, you can really have everybody kind of get together. So at least they're going to have some of that, more of it next year. But we'll see how that all works. But, no, I think that, it's moving in the right direction.
John, I love that Ryan Griffin re-signing with the Bucs is a headline, not because it's good news and he's a competent backup for Tom Brady, but he's the one that helped steer him to safety after he was drunkenly walking off a boat.
Mm-hmm.
That he became famous for basically holding Brady up as he was waving and smiling drunkenly walking off the boat. And that's how Ryan Griffin is known to people, not because he's an NFL backup quarterback.
Yeah, I don't think they changed the number he was going to get. I mean, maybe it got him the $137,500 signing bonus, but it sure didn't do anything as far as getting him to be the backup quarterback.
I'm still amazed that Tom Brady did that last year.
Mm-hmm.
Now that Bob brings it up and you realize that he just went to Tampa and won a Super Bowl.
I know. I mean, and again, it's like I thought that putting Tom Brady on that team, a team that had gone like about a decade without a winning record, I thought that would make him a wild card team, which it did. But then they switched things around and they played so well in the playoffs that they go to the Super Bowl and they get a Super Bowl victory.
John, before we let you go, have we heard anything else on Alden Smith?
No, I guess the big thing is what happens on the tape, and that's why sometimes you don't want to rush to judgment, because think about what happened a week ago. Here's Aaron Glenn, and he's accused
Aaron Donald.
Aaron Donald. I mean, he's accused of beating up some guy bad with broken bones and everything else. And as it turns out, they show the tape, and on the tape, he's there trying to get his buddies off this guy because the guy came over and tried to hit Aaron with a bottle. And so the tape showed that Aaron Donald was out there, pulling guys away, not trying to incite a fight. And then we'll see. Now, that Alden Smith's going to claim, yeah, the tape will show that I didn't do this. I didn't choke the guy. So I guess wait for the tape and see when it comes out. In fact, you know, right before we started here, I was trying to check a Google search to see if the tape, you know, had come out. TMZ maybe have gotten a hold of anything like that, because the tape's going to determine, I think, where this is all going to go.
I haven't even heard his Alden said, "I'm innocent. I didn't do this." I haven't heard any comments.
Has he checked into the police yet? Because he's still got a warrant out,
yeah.
And I haven't seen that he's arrived and gone back to the police.
Wow. John, as always, we appreciate it. We'll do it again tomorrow.
All right. Sounds good.
There you go. If you missed any of today's cold, hard facts, brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill, download the podcast at 710sports.com. Is that the helmet thing, Graz, I find interesting. I'm wondering how different, you know, if we get to a point where every position group has a unique helmet, how different might they look? Like, are we going to be able to at some point see a helmet and go, oh, that's a linebacker helmet. Oh, that's a wide receiver helmet. Or is it going to be really subtle? I mean, it's kind of a fascinating thing.
I think that will probably be noticeable, won't you? I mean, eventually, and maybe not at first, but I can imagine, you know, them being really, really different. I mean, right now you can kind of tell by the grill to a degree, you know, what position group has their helmets. So
right.
I would imagine that they wouldn't, you know, I mean, it'll be interesting to see, I mean, how much they're really willing to do this, how much this has to do with style versus substance, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, they've got to look cool. I mean, then nobody's going to say, yeah, I want that helmet if it looks like, you got this great gazoo. We got a giant head out there. You know, one of those big bulbous helmets
great
that makes
gazoo.
It makes your head look, you know, 10 sizes bigger than it is. So, yeah, style has a lot. You know, we always hear these, especially the younger players, whether it's baseball, football, what have you, they talk about, oh, I always love their uniforms. Uniforms are a huge deal to them. So
definitely.
You got to look good. The helmet's got to be cool looking, man. It can't be some.
Well, it's got to be cool looking, but at the same time, I mean, if you're talking about safety, and you're going to have like wide receivers wearing smaller helmets because they don't get hit in the head as much as linebackers or linemen do, you know, you're going to have to find a way to wade to, you know, the increased interest in safety with fashion.
Yeah, it's a delicate line between those two and the. The increase. I got excited for a moment when John was talking about more contact. I'm going, really? What? They're going to allow more contact on the field? And then he's communication with the replay guys.
And by the way, just a quick Google search. No, nothing on Alden Smith at all today.
It's where
every story is from yesterday.
The only thing we heard is that he informed the Seahawks of what was going on. But I haven't heard. Typically, you'll hear, hey, I'm going to be proven innocent, or I can't. You know, I look forward to, you know, being able to talk about it when I'm allowed to, and I'll have my innocence proven or what have you. And as John pointed out, it apparently he's still wanted. We don't have any word that he's turned himself in.
I guess I'm looking at what they're saying on NBC, and it says that the video could support the notion that Smith and other family members went to talk to the husband. Okay, that's not the point. Smith may contend that he didn't touch the man. If the video can indeed back that up, it could be resolved just as quickly as that's what Clayton was talking about, as the Donald situation was. So we'll see, although obviously two different reputations here at work.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, again, you don't, unfortunately for him, he doesn't have the benefit of the doubt. And when his name comes up in the news for the wrong reasons, the automatic assumption is, well, screwed up again, because that's been his history. You know, so
well, he's got video this time. So he's got, whether it's good or bad, I mean, it won't be based on his word. I didn't do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, for his sake, you hope it proves that it's a big mistake and he didn't have anything to do with it, like Aaron Donald in his situation. All right. Coming up, how do the Mariners find the offense against some great starters? They're going to be facing some. We've seen them go up against a few. How do they find it? We'll talk about it next with Wyman and Bob. The Graz is in for Wyman on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
We got the Graz in for Dave Wyman, who's on vacation until Thursday. Always good to have Graz with us, talking some baseball, talking football with the professor earlier, and back to the Mariner conversation. As they get the day off tomorrow, Graz, so a little break before they start the rest of the gauntlet, if you will, with the four-game stretch in Boston, and then they've, as we talked about, they're going to be facing some good pitching, and they already have to this point. You saw him go up against Carlos Rodon, who dominated him, and then he went on to throw a no-hitter after that. Zach Greinke shut him down. We just saw Arias go out there and was ridiculous today. And you know, Lefko, our producer, is asking the question, how do they adjust at the plate when facing a great starter? I think this is, you know, with the youth and inexperience on this team, these are going to be those moments that are learning moments where they're going to go up there and face a pitcher the likes of which they haven't really experienced, certainly at the minor league level. And a lot of these guys probably have never been, you know, seen just some of the filthy stuff these guys can throw at this level with the A, the velocity, B, the movement, and C, the command. Their ability just to nibble at the corners. And you saw in this series with the Dodgers, a lot of these low strikes being – a lot will depend on the ump behind the plate and his strike zone.
Always.
But you saw a lot of guys, even Mitch Haniger, who's got a ton of experience – really chasing those breaking balls low and away. He was striking out on those a number of times in this two-game series. So even veteran guys who've had success in this league struggle against pitching like that. So this could be a pretty telling stretch for a lot of these young guys like White and Trammell and Crawford and Lewis and everybody we've talked about.
Well, I got the easy answer to the question.
Which is?
Trust the process.
Is that what it is?
Trust.
I feel like I've heard that.
Did you hear that? Yeah, I recoiled when I saw that in one of the game stories a couple of days ago. That's what the Mariners were calling it. It made me think of El Hombre's rants and screeds about the Philadelphia 76ers and their fans talking about trust the process, trust the process.
Yeah,
but it kind of applies here to a degree. I mean, what it's about is when you're a young hitter is having the discipline to look at some pitches. I mean, to go deep into counts and. And then, you know, be ready to do something, you know, the second at-bat, or if you get the third at-bat, a lot of times you don't. You just get the second at-bat. But, you know, to take advantage of what you learned in that second at-bat. So there's something to do with that. I mean, the Mariners, you know, have kind of tried to preach that, it seems, in general, is a patient approach at the plate. You know, I understand that you got to balance it with being aggressive. But if you're a young hitter in particular, I think that it's probably behooves you to see as many pitches as you can possibly see and still be comfortable up there. So that's what I would think that you, when you're seeing things go well, even if they're not getting hits and runs, when they're getting those, you know, those, what's that stat, bat bip or whatever it is, that judges, you know, how hard you're hitting the ball, even if it's getting caught. You know, if you see them hitting line drives and things like that deep in the counts, you know, it should feel like it's getting better. So that's kind of one of the things that I'd look at a little bit and see if their guys have the discipline to kind of stay with in against those pitchers that you're talking about, you know, the process of just looking at some pitches.
Well, and you're right as far as, you know, trying to find the positive even when they're not coming up with hits. And then we brought that up earlier talking about Evan White, who currently is hitting 186. You know, people talk about his exit velo and how he's squaring up the ball. And when he does make contact, he's really squaring it up, hitting the ball hard. It just and I guess I can live with struggles rather than the swings and misses we're seeing, like from Trammell. I've talked about him saying, you know, I just want him to see him put the ball in play. If he makes an out, he makes an out. But just cut down on the swing and miss. He's got 25 strikeouts so far. So he's striking out at a pretty good rate. I'd like to see that change. If the average is still low, but he's putting the ball in play, maybe he's moving runners down, moving them over, you know, even though he's making it out. Great. There's something productive about, you know, come up with some productive outs. Give yourself a chance. And what I'm seeing, like, from Trammell in particular is him being really aggressive, trying to jump on that first pitch. A lot of swing and miss on that first pitch. So, you know, that's what I would hope for. And who knows what Service's message will be, you know, when facing these guys. I don't think it changes from guy to guy to guy. Maybe he's encouraging them to go up there. Hey, you think you got your pitch on that? You go after it. I want to say, or I don't know if he's saying, hey, have some patience. Take a look at something. Let's see what he's got. Or, you know, who knows what his message is with these guys.
The thing is, you know, is you and I lamented about it when we were doing the show regularly together was the fact that the strikeout has lost its shame value.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
We want more shame.
You know what I mean? Guys that don't want to strike out. I mean, that was a big deal. And it's not that long ago. I mean, that was a big deal. That you know, when guys struck out, they really tried not to. And you know, you talked about moving runners along and things like that. I mean, that's not commonly, you know, the baseball that's being played nowadays. So it kind of flies in the face of that as well as what the trend is, which is boom or bust. You know, which is strikeout or home run. I mean, you know, we know that That's kind of what the new metrics of baseball show to be most valued and most effective, even though I've always made the point that I think it takes a tremendous amount of watchability away from the game.
Yeah.
That just seeing boom or bust all the time is just not that entertaining. But, you know, as long as that becomes as long as everyone's going purely by stats, and that's what the stats show, I mean, you're not going to see a change.
Yeah, I think you hit it. You got to bring shame back into the game. That's the new slogan. Bring shame back into the game, because shame.
Like the goalie at the start of the of slap shot. You know, you go into the penalty box, you feel shame.
Yeah,
you know, feel shame when you strike out.
Yeah, because it does happen a lot, and you're right. The emphasis of the strikeout, or I guess the shame factor, has been removed. You know, with sabermetrics, it's put a different value on things, but. Listen, I don't know how you'd spin it, and I don't want to pick on Taylor Trammell because he's my favorite guy to root for right now. I love this kid. But you look at him, you go, okay, he's hitting 176. He's had 51 at-bats, Gras, 25 strikeouts. He has struck out almost exactly half the time. You can't do that. That's untenable. You've got to, while there might not be as much shame attached to that, there's got to be a little. There's got to be a little shame. There's got to be a little urgency to rectify that swing and miss rate, because there's a lot of it happening. It was great to see the first game last night. Again, him launching that home run opposite field, by the way, over 400 feet, crushed it. The double was great. But overall, we're looking at it going, okay, this, we got to bring that number down a little bit. Striking out literally every other at-bat, you can't sustain that.
1988, Wade Boggs won the batting title at 366. OPS was 965, 719 plate appearances. Struck out 34 times.
Oh, my God. How many plate appearances?
719.
Oh, my goodness.
Struck out 34 times.
Trammell's almost there.
And I'm talking about 88, you know, so I'm not going into ancient history for that. It's not a Babe Ruth number or something like that happened in the 20s or the era of the dead ball. It's not that long ago. You know why Wade Boggs didn't strike out? Because he didn't want to feel shame.
Yeah, that's right. Sometimes shame is a good thing, Gras. I'm telling you got this slogan right now. Bring shame back into the game. That's it. Let's get the shirts made.
But it's just not – I just don't see it changing dramatically, and I think it's tough for young players, you know, because you don't concentrate as much on the batting skills. I mean, you lamented long and hard about the shift, and guys should be able to figure it out and just bunt into it, bunt down the third baseline when no one's there.
Yeah.
And here we are years later, and no one's teaching that, no one's doing it.
Now they're talking about trying to, you know, potentially outlaw it. I'm thinking, man, that's defense.
Oh, I'm kind of thinking that – I know what you mean. I know where you're going. It shouldn't be that way. But I'm in the – you know, was it Greg, the guy from MLB Network that we were talking to?
Amsinger.
Yeah, who talked about, you know, all the big changes in baseball. I mean, that would be one that I would do. I could definitely see outlawing the shift.
Yeah, there's that stubborn part of me that says, no, make them, you know, pay for it. Make them learn how to go against it. And instead of trying to pull that pitch that's low and away and rolling over on it, go with it and hit it the opposite field. But you see so many hitters
that
are
stubborn. Learning, Bob.
I know.
They're not learning. They won't learn.
They're stubborn.
They feel no shame.
They're stubborn. That's it.
They're shameless.
We've got a new slogan. Bring shame back into the game. We've got it. We've got it. All right. Coming up, Mariners-Red Sox series will begin on Thursday. We'll get a little preview going. Coming up, it's Wyman and Bob with the Gras in on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
A reminder, if you don't have the 710 Sports app, you should download it because, A, it's free, which is the best price possible, and, B, you've got everything at your fingertips. If you're out enjoying the weather, you can take us with you. You never miss a moment of the show, or you can listen to podcasts. You can watch the video stream. You can text. You got everything right there at your disposal. It's powered by Dubin Law Group, so check out the 710 Sports app if you don't already have that. All right, we talked about the schedule coming up for the Mariners, Gras, where they've got four on the road against Boston, who's very good so far.
Listen to this about Boston. 11-6.
Mm-hmm.
Eight of their games come from behind wins.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was just reading a thing about it. You know, they've always managed to come up with clever phrases, like, wasn't it Cowboy Up a few years back? And
yeah,
just a bunch of idiots a few years behind that. Well, they've got a couple of things going on this year's team. They've started waving. When guys hit doubles, they wave frantically into the dugout after that. And it started with Alex Cora, their manager. So it started with Franchi Cordero, who hit one into there, and everyone started doing it. They just copied them. Yesterday, I was actually waving at my kids after the game. My kids were up there. I was waving at them. I didn't get a hit or a double. It's just something cool. It's camaraderie. You got to make it fun. They're having fun at it. They have a cart in the dugout now, and they're waving at each other. It's a fun group. It's fun to watch. We're enjoying it. And so Red Sox rookie Bobby Dalbec says, everybody's a fun guy. Just a bunch of fun guys. They're the fun guys.
They are.
Actually, when guys hit home runs, they push them to the dugout in laundry carts.
That's great. That's
so
unity.
The Red Sox
that's galvanizing.
Yeah, exactly. Precisely. And eight come from behind wins. This is a team that was a fourth or fifth place last year. So they're playing the fun guys. And we'll see if this is something that the Red Sox can maintain a little bit, because I agree with you, man. I think when you can find that kind of camaraderie, find some hook that just works for you, and you can go with for a while. And in Cora, you know, the manager who's not, you know, I can imagine Tony La Russa, if he had the bunch of fun guys around, how he would react.
Ugh.
You got a manager that'll let you do it.
Yeah.
We'll see. I'm interested in seeing the Red Sox play. I mean, they seem like, just by reading what I'm reading, a very likable bunch of fun guys.
And it's paying off. They're in first place. They lead Major League Baseball in team batting average and runs scored. You look at their stats. It was interesting. You could look at the Mariners stat page and then compare it to the Red Sox. The Red Sox, you go all the way down. You start with Xander Bogaerts. Just looking at batting average, .386 with a .435 on-base percentage. J.D. Martinez right behind him, .383, .439 on-base percentage. You just keep working your way down, .318, .308, .295. It takes a while before you get to one guy who's hitting under .200. They got one. You got Marwin Gonzalez hitting .209, and then below him is Hunter Renfro, who's hitting .184. Everybody else is representative, whereas you look at the Mariners, it's a little different. You got a lot of guys. You got a 186, a 176, a 154, a 125, a 115, a 100. So you got, you know, and those above 200, you got a 212, a 200, a 224. It's just a different lineup. It's a very long lineup, much like what we just saw with the LA Dodgers. You've got that in the Boston Red Sox, who, again, are leading all of Major League Baseball in team batting average and runs scored. And that is a deep, deep lineup, where you look at the Mariners and you're really counting on Mitch Haniger and Ty France and Kyle Seager, who has cooled off, who was off to a red hot start. Now he's hitting .224. He's cooled off. But you're counting on those veterans, those guys, to really sort of carry the load until the young guys, the Evan Whites and Taylor Trammell and, you know, and Kyle Lewis can get his legs back under him, get his rhythm and timing. You're counting on those guys to sort of carry it for all these young guys who are scuffling for the most part at the plate right now.
Well, Kyle Lewis, you expect him to be back to where he was.
Yeah, he's...
I mean, you're right. It's going to take some time to get his timing down and everything like that. But your expectation is he's the player he showed you last year.
Yeah, that's the hope. I'm just wondering, how long does it take? Because he's a young guy who's never played a full season. He played 60 games last year, was the rookie of the year, looks promising. You know, the year before that came up at the very end and caught everybody's eye with, six home runs in 10 games or whatever that number was. It was ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, caps it off with a shortened season, but a rookie of the year. But we don't know what he looks like over 162. And we also don't know how long is it going to take him to find his rhythm and find his timing. He has, you know, this was his first game today against a really tough pitcher. Maybe he's going to, Mitch Haniger picked up where he left off. It was like he never missed a moment and he was gone for over a year and a half. I don't know that that's a fair expectation of Kyle Lewis. You hope to see something similar, but I don't expect it. So I'm kind of keeping him out of the mix right now because I think perhaps it could take some time for him to get up to speed. So I'm not putting it on him yet.
Right. But, yeah, he's got to get there, though. He's got to get there because they're counting on him being a regular bat. And I agree with you. It'll take some time, and he's a young player. So, you know, you kind of hope that's all it's going to be is just a little bit of time. But he's – This is a guy who you know, had plenty of knocks on the way up. It wasn't this smooth ride from being the, you know, the first round draft pick of Jerry Dipoto's reign to Rookie of the Year. And he took some knocks and dealt with a lot of stuff along the way. So hopefully that'll serve him well. But it'll be interesting to see the Red Sox. I forgot Chris Sale was there, and he's not playing yet. I mean, he's bouncing back from injury, but they're actually expecting him to be perhaps available by the summer, or a couple of months. So the Red Sox may be a team that's for real. I mean, they may be there for the long haul in the AL East. I don't think the Yankees are going to lose 105 games either.
You don't think so?
So I don't think so.
How weird is
that? I mean, because so many crazy that's as weird as Kansas City and the Mariners and the Red Sox being in first place. Yeah. I mean, they're 6-10. They won, so they won their last game.
Yeah.
So you know, after getting booed like crazy, so I mean, they're gonna be fine. They're gonna be a whole lot better. But it's they've really gotten off to a slow start. And look, I think the American League champs are gonna be tough again this year. I think Tampa is still loaded. I mean, they've still got a great pitching staff. They got a lot of confidence, I thought, from last year's team coming as close as they came. I expect them to be there too. So it's Red Sox are in deep. If they're going to be good in that division, it's not going to be easy.
Yeah, we'll see what these standings look like as they get deeper into the season. I would imagine things will shift and it'll start to resemble what you would expect. And it's certainly not the Yankees in the cellar in the American League East they got the Orioles ahead of them for God's sakes here. So they've got the Orioles at 7-9. Are a game better than the Yankees at 6-10, who have won one in a row right now. They've dropped 7 of 10. And then you brought up Tampa. They got off to a rough start. They've now won 4 in a row just to get above 500. They're 9-8 after winning 4 in a row. So it tells you about the start they got off to. But they're in second, 2 games behind Boston, who's just rolling. They've won 7 of 10. And, again, they're putting up runs. They've scored 96 runs so far in 17 games. Mm. And a plus 28 run differential, which I think is only second to the Dodgers. Dodgers are a plus 38 run differential
already.
Yeah. So it's
not with the Mariners though. It's 4-4, baby.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. but we'll see. I think it's going to be a fun series. I think it's going to be fun. Just to, again, a measuring stick. If they can split, awesome. That's always the hope in this 4-game series on the road. You walk out of there with a split, mission accomplished. If you can take 3 of 4, that's gravy. That's awesome. So we'll see what they can get done as we start that. And we'll obviously talk more about it. They've got the day off tomorrow, so we've got a full show tomorrow. I want to thank our guests today, El Hombre, Michael Bradley, John Clayton joined us. If you missed any of today's show, head to the podcast page, 710sports.com. Just click the podcast tab, scroll down to our picture, click on that, and you'll find everything you're missing each and every day right there. Graz, great stuff. We'll do it again tomorrow.
Sounds good, Bob.
All right. We'll talk to you tomorrow right here, everybody, with Wyman and Bob. The Graz in one more day tomorrow on 710 ESPN Seattle.